Hello and welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast. I'm Melissa Riccobono, and I'm here with two of my favorite NFB members.
Yeah, who's your most favorite? I'm a Neil Lewis. Am I your most favorite?
No.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean, of the two of us, before we introduce this mystery.
Oh, of the two? Oh, yeah. I can't. How can I pick? That'd be all like right. Picking between the favorite of... Well, that's a bad analogy.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I see where you're going there. Now, I have favorites between the kids every now and then. They alter every now.
Flip your membership coin
to find out.
I understand, yes.
But just to let our listeners get a sample of who we're going to be bringing into this initial conversation, many of you hopefully are aware of our flagship publication, the Braille Monitor, which is our history of our blindness movement. It captures a lot around our membership, the activities, our philosophy, our evolving perspective on the role of blind people in society. And that's only done because we have really good editors who really work to find those articles, refine those articles, and help us to publish those articles. And we're pleased to be joined today by our editor, Mr. Gary Wunder.
Hi.
How are you, Gary?
Glad to be here.
Well,
I'm doing well.
Have you. And you're from
delighted to be here.
You're here from Missouri.
I am, and I am in Missouri as I speak.
Excellent.
I tell you, the miracles of technology.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And by the way, Gary, you're one of my favorite, too.
Yes, you're definitely one of my favorite people. If you haven't met Gary Wunder, guys, you should definitely meet him. He's a very genuine, honest...
Hysterically
yeah. Funny. Just really all around great guy.
So. Yeah, I was just saying hysterical. No.
Well, and you know, if you're going to meet me, you better meet me pretty quickly. I just turned 65 and everybody has been writing me saying, now you're officially old. Thanks a lot. You know,
geez.
That was worse than turning 40 and people saying, oh, you're middle aged.
Nah, you still got time. As long as you're not eligible for Social Security benefits, you're going to live. It's once you become eligible for Social Security benefits, that's when your life expectancy gets scary.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah. Sorry to be so depressing, but there you go.
Well,
why do we have Gary on this thing anyway?
Well, Gary, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, a little bit about your work with the Braille Monitor, how long you've been editing it, what it means to you as editor. Let's go from there.
Well, I'm the father of four children, which is a miracle because when I was growing up, I wasn't sure I would ever be able to be a father figure, the major income earner. I worked for 31 years as a computer programmer, and one day I got a call from Dr. Maurer, and he said, how would you like to edit the Braille Monitor? And I thought, what a switch. And all of the time that I had been volunteering articles, people said, you know, I didn't think a chiphead who wrote code for computers could actually write language that people could understand. And so I thought, wow, what a challenge. And I asked him if I could think about it overnight. But in truth, what I really wanted to do was go home and talk to Debbie and get her to affirm that this was also a good decision. I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. I started with the August-September issue in 2010, and I officially came on staff at the end of June. So it's been almost 10 years now.
Wow.
I love the job. It's a little bit like my programming job. I'm actually surprised that some people would pay me to do things that I would do for free if given the opportunity.
Well, it's out there now. We'll be talking to President Rick.
Yeah, it's out there.
We'll be adjusting your salary appropriately.
No raise for me next year.
Well,
that's right.
May even be something different. Nice.
That's right.
10 years. Wow.
That's a long time. So for those that don't know, the Braille Monitor is 11 issues a year. We have one that is August-September, which covers our whole convention. And that's probably, even though I go to convention every year, that's still probably my favorite issue each year just because it captures convention so well and so meaningfully. But this last issue was really interesting because it talked a lot about what it means. Our tagline, live the life you want.
And this is the March 2020
issue. This is the March 2020 issue. That's right.
Yeah.
And so I'd love to have a little conversation with all of us here, since there's three of us here, which we don't always get to have. It's really exciting. You know, what are some of the things, I guess we'll start with you, Gary, since you're the editor. What were some of the most interesting perspectives that you took away from editing this monitor with the Live the Life You Want tagline articles?
Well, I was interested in what Amy Wilson said about not knowing that she had the choice to live the life she wanted, and that somebody was willing to affirm that was an okay thing. I like the fact that Scott LaBarre talked about live the life you want means dealing with a bunch of people who start from very different places economically, intellectually, geographically, innate talents, personality characteristics. I like that very much. I enjoyed how President Riccobono talked about how he moved from faking it to actually deciding that he could live the life that he wanted. And I tried to relate a little bit of my own personal experience, which is that sometimes I hear the criticism that live the life you want is really live the life that we as Federationists want you to live. And I just don't think that's true. My personal experience contradicts that.
Expound on that a little bit, Gary.
Yeah,
what do you think they mean when they say live the life you want as the Federation wants you to live?
I think they're saying that if you can't become some kind of elite, super blind person, the Federation doesn't want anything to do with you.
Interesting.
And live the life you want is a mandate that you do that. And I just don't find that to be the case.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we're a civil rights organization. We promote people who make it big. Every organization promotes people that make it big. But we also promote people who don't make it so big,
right.
You know? I didn't go to an Ivy League law school, and yet nobody criticizes me. I'm not in Mensa. Nobody criticizes me. I don't have a law degree, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm a computer programmer. I have a Bachelor of Science in computing. I've had jobs that ranged from working in the sheltered workshop to my first job in journalism, which was putting inserts in newspapers for the Columbia Daily Tribune. Now, that was not a great job, but it was a job.
It was a job.
It was something to do while I was looking for work. It gave me a reason to get up in the morning.
So it appears that the confusion there is, and I'm glad you're kind of touching on it, is externally people who have this concern feel that we are elitists, and every member of the Federation meets that expectation of being perfect in every way mm-hmm. around blindness. And if that's their sense, then they really need to come just visit me. I'm nowhere near perfect. I'm a definite work in progress. And I think that distorting or confusing the goal of the organization to help everyone reach their full potential based on giving them access to the tools and strategies and training that will allow them to do that is different than people believing that we are the elite blind of the world.
Right. And I think we're always just so hard on ourselves. I hear people a lot, which is really sad, say, well, I take paratransit. I know that's not a good, I know that's not a good thing. I know the NFP doesn't agree. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Like if that gets you where you need to be and that's the way you
right.
live the life you want, like that should be just as much your choice as long as you're making that choice, not because you think it's your only choice,
mm-hmm.
but because you've weighed all the options and you believe mm-hmm. it's your best choice and your best tool. It's all about the tools. And I really liked, Gary, how you wrote in your article how if we don't have enough articles about people, just sort of your normal average everyday people, or maybe people who have struggled a little bit or whatever it is, you know, you really invited people, write those articles, submit mm-hmm. them. You know, we need them. We need those kinds of stories as well. And it's not that we're not publishing them. It's maybe that we haven't gotten any like that or as many as we should.
I think that there is some self-censorship involved. If you mm-hmm. think that an article won't be taken, you
yep.
don't write it.
Exactly.
If you think you'll be put down for it, you don't
yep.
write it. And some people even turn their inability or their unwillingness to write into a virtue. They say, I already know the landscape.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go step on the landmine. That's just not the case, though.
Yeah.
You know, I would like to be elite at some things. I think elite is a word that has a connotation that is difficult, but elite is a right fine word.
Yeah.
You want your astronauts to be elite. You
yeah.
want your military to be composed of elite people.
I want my Lyft driver to be an elite driver.
Yes. Me too,
quite
honestly.
You are absolutely right.
Yeah.
You are absolutely right. And, you know, I think that sometimes when I interpret something as overly critical that someone has said to me, it is that I have been a little bit hard on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm tending toward being defensive, all you've got to say is a word or two, and now I'm in that camp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nothing you did. It's something that I did.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back to Melissa's point about be easy on yourself.
Yes.
We are human beings.
Oh my gosh.
We are not models
No.
Who are trying to portray something for a television show. We are interested in living our lives. And that means some days are great and some days are not so great. And some days I model wonderful behavior and some days I model behavior that isn't so good.
Yeah.
My husband said a while back, because I was upset about something, and he said, you know, there are some people in this world that get up, go to their job, come home, drink a beer or some wine, watch TV, and then get up and do it all over again. Like, that's the life that they want. And that's fine. You know, maybe you're hard on yourself because you want something a little bit different or a little bit more, but you don't have to always reach for, like, there's a lot of other people that are doing just fine that are just out there just living the everyday sort of thing. So
I think one of the things that we need to realize is that we all have innate abilities, and some of them are greater than others. Mm-hmm. I, for instance, will go anywhere in the country that I'm asked to go for the Federation. But when I walk into a restaurant, I may get so involved with talking with the waitress and the companions that I'm with that when I sit down, I have no idea where the door out is, mm-hmm. okay?
Sure.
So I stand up and either I ask somebody, or if nobody's convenient, maybe I call Ira. Now, I hear my fellow Federationists sometimes be hard on themselves and say, well, I cheated. I used Ira. Hmm. You know, if I'm paying the premium that I'm paying to use Ira, I'm not going to call it cheating.
No.
It's like paying someone to take your tests. You know that. No, it's not cheating at all.
No.
And that's an interesting comparison, because sometimes when I hear people doing that, I think it boils down to a reflection of their insecurity as opposed to them assessing whether you're cheating. And I also think that based on the previous discussion we were talking about, it's a part of the perspective of people outside of the organization who tend to tout. Because I was at a similar event, talking about food rather, and I was going through a line and the dressing was in a carafe instead of just the normal little dressing bowl with a spoon. So, yeah, I can pour dressing from a carafe onto a salad. But I knew that, you know, the chances of me doing that without putting more than I really wanted on there were probably going to be more likely than others. Or the alternative skill I would have used was to pour a little in something else to spoon it out to it. So I got my purpose, because you can't measure it as you're pouring it out that way. Yeah. So I simply asked someone else to do it. And they're like, no, that's not the Federation way. Yeah, it is. I'm a Federationist. That was the way I chose to do it at that particular time. It's really interesting how the standards being set based on people's perceptions rather than really understanding the organizational philosophy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's why we have to share our struggles as well, not mm-hmm. just our successes, because, you know, it's not just coping or overcoming low expectations or having low expectations. You know, sometimes it's websites that aren't accessible. Sometimes there's just barriers in the world that are kind of stacked against you. Or maybe you have multiple disabilities or deafblindness or personal struggles, mental health struggles, whatever it is. But I think every story we can learn from each other, and mm-hmm. it just makes us closer as people. I mean, we talk all the time about the NFB family, and together with love, hope, and determination, we transform dreams into reality. Mm-hmm. And the love, there's no accident that the love is first. I mean, we really do care about each other. And if we're not willing to be present, fully present with one another and share without judgment mm-hmm. and share our successes, but also share our struggles, then we're missing out on a lot. I mean, you really need to be a full, real person. And that's not always easy at all, especially if you're, you know, trying to impress someone that you've just met, or, you know, whatever it is that you just have always heard that we do things certain ways. But quite honestly, just having that courage to be vulnerable and really share everything. And especially when you're struggling, especially if you need help, asking for help, that's okay. That's more than okay. How else are you going to learn?
Mm-hmm. And people ask for help. It's not a blind thing.
Yes, exactly.
So Gary, you mentioned one of the responses, I forget the author's name, it was a lady that was talking about the choices. And I think that really kind of speaks to the live the life you want, because to some degree, I would challenge that maybe we do mean live the life you want based on the Federation expectation or whatever, because we know through our lived experience that there's so many possibilities for a person to live a particular life that only exists because of our advocacy and our support, being peer support or whatever, of one another. So maybe there is kind of a nuance kind of expectation for people to live the lives, you know, based on the opportunities that we've created. What do you think about that?
I think live the life you want certainly can be an evolutionary statement. When I was 18, I thought that living the life I wanted was going and living with my grandmother and coming home to her every evening after my college experience. And I went to Columbia, Missouri for an 8-week summer school class and dated women and lived in a dormitory, and to live the life you want changed.
Yeah, I know that's right. You have more choices.
Yeah. Right. I have more choices.
It only took 8 weeks. That's pretty good. Well,
you know, Gary, he's elite.
Man.
He's elite.
There you go. So, you know, if somebody had told me that being a good blind person meant that I had to go travel on the campus of the University of Missouri at Columbia, as a high school senior, I would have said, no, I'm looking for a smaller campus because I'm not sure I can handle the mobility challenge. When I got here and found out I could do it, then that was a different thing. So I think live the life you want is something that you can evolve into. And I make no apology for the fact that being around Federationists sometimes means that you're not going to get praised for the small things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had an agreement with myself that I was going to get over the bar. But the agreement was that I would raise the bar just high enough I could step over it. I really didn't have to do any jumping.
Mm-hmm.
That's not living the life I want, really. I want to do more than that. I want to be challenged. My grandmother used to say, live and learn. And that means being open to lots of things that today I don't understand, but maybe tomorrow I will.
Mm-hmm.
And so I agree with that.
You just said you want to be challenged. So what about those individuals that I'm fine, and this is where I want to be? Do we still say that they're meeting that whole live the life you want expectation?
I think we say that we accept where you are. And you get to make the choice,
mm-hmm.
and you have to live with the choice. And if you're comfortable with it, that's all right. You know, unless live the life you want means that you expect us to tell you how to be a better bank robber.
Yes.
I think mostly we can deal with that. And of course, even if you go to prison for being a bank robber, we're going to be interested in seeing that you get the same kind of rights that other prisoners get.
Yeah, there you go.
I think live the life you want is truly individual, and that we need to push you enough that you can see possibilities that maybe you've not seen before, mm-hmm. but not push you so hard that you feel alienated and that you vote with your feet, and that
yes.
the experience with us is more a downer than an upper. And nobody wants
no.
to do that.
Or that you never feel good enough.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think that's the real I think that can be really a true statement for some people, that they mm-hmm. just feel like they're just never good enough. They're not. And I think that's a lot of different.
But you're a counselor, Melissa.
Is
that us as an organization through our messaging, or is that the individual that introspectively is just feeling and dealing with that?
I think, and not to get into huge you know, our producer's probably looking at me like, oh, my goodness, what are you going to talk about?
Well,
But they
can always cut it out later.
They can. That's true.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's a really big problem for people in general now, especially because we have social media.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of parents blind and sighted that don't feel good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of people in their jobs, teachers, that don't feel good enough because they see all these beautiful things on Pinterest or these beautiful, you know, Facebook posts and that look so nice about, oh, I did this with my beautiful child today. And
mm-hmm.
and then you look at your own pictures and you think, oh, my gosh, what did I do? So, I mean, I think that's really a danger kind of in society already.
Mm-hmm.
So don't really try not to fall into that trap. Like, we will support you. We will talk to you about, you know, if you I think, Gary, you're exactly right. What is it that we might tell you or that hanging around with us might help you realize, oh, maybe I could be a parent.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I could travel a little bit better. Oh, but I don't really know how. And I think that's really where we have to be gentle.
Yeah.
And that's really where we need people to reach out and say, you know what? I want this, or I think I might want this. I'm scared as heck, but I want to know how.
Mm-hmm.
I really want help. And that's really where we can be helpful, and we do it better, I think, than any other organization. You know, we do talk a lot about tough love, and we do give that to when we think people are ready for it.
Yeah.
But we also can give a lot of just really nice encouragement. And, you know, I think we can really give a lot to chapter members, especially those that are just newly blind that might not truly know what's possible.
Right. And even if a person is not like Gary that says they want to be challenged, I know with me, when externally people were telling me that me reading 33 words per minute in Braille was phenomenal, if the Federation didn't come by and say, no, that's okay. But we have blind people, you know, really in your situation that you should be reading 120 words. If they didn't make me aware that that was even a potential, then I would not have strived to live more with respect to increasing my Braille literacy. But I wanted to go back to one of the words you introduced to, Gary, was as long as a person feels comfortable. And I think that sometimes we use comfortable as a way to acquiesce. Like I was talking to some individuals, back to Melissa's point around paratransit, that were saying it's their choice, you know, to use paratransit. But if you don't have any other alternative way of doing it, it's not really a choice. So once you learn how to travel independently and you learn how to use public transportation, fixed route, et cetera, and you choose to use paratransit, then it's actually a choice. So do people sometimes acquiesce by just saying it's comfortable?
Yeah, I think comfortable can certainly be a trap that says, I really can't do anymore, and therefore I'm comfortable. And again, it's getting to know people. It's building relationships so that you can make that judgment. Mm-hmm. Is this person really performing at 100% by walking from their door to the door of the paratransit? Is it their anxiety level that keeps them from doing some of the things that we might think that they could do more independently? There's a lot to being a human being that we have to factor in. And so living the life you want has more to do, well, it has a lot to do with the whole human being and not just the fact that you're blind.
That's a really
and we
got
to figure that out because we all have more depth than just our visual acuity or lack thereof.
You know, it's really interesting. I had an epiphany fairly recently. I have been one that has just been so adamant that people should take their own notes in college classes. You know, I just I was, you should take your own because then you know what you're, you know, you know what's important and you're more engaged in the lecture and this and that. And then I was talking to somebody and she said, you know, I was in a class and the teacher wasn't writing anything on the board. And this is a sighted woman. And she said, I had so much trouble taking notes because I wasn't used to just listening. And I thought, you know what? That's really true. And just because you're blind might not mean that you're like, maybe you're more of a visual learner. Maybe you have some kind of an audio processing disorder. Like there could actually be reasons that a blind person might really benefit from getting notes from a professor or having someone take notes, not because they can't do it as a blind person, but because maybe there's other issues that are coming in that, you know, not everybody can listen and track and as good, you know, are good. I was good at that for whatever reason, but there are probably people that aren't. And I just thought, I'm definitely not going to say, oh, you should always just have someone else take your notes. But I'm going to be a little bit more nuanced, I guess, in the advice that I give and kind of talk to them about, you know, do you have trouble following somebody and writing it down? Or does that really, can you not do that? Like, do you get so lost in the writing of it down that by the time you've written everything down, somebody's onto something else and you didn't hear what they said? You know, those are kind of questions that we need to ask. And so that's really changed my perspective.
Yeah. And that's a tremendous gray area because people, they try it. And if they don't do it instantly, they're thinking that they can't do it.
Right.
And not recognizing that it takes time to acquire a skill.
Yes.
I mean, because I have the same with individuals that I know within meetings that say, well, I can't host a meeting and take notes. Well, I mean, you can. I mean, just based on the fact that you can take notes and I've seen you host meetings, it may not happen all instantly, but you should try. And I start trying to provide them with some tools to kind of do that.
I think there's a lot to be said for being honest with oneself and being able to objectively assess and then be real with yourself about what you mean when you say you can't take notes. If it means you don't have an effective way to read and write, that's one thing.
Yes.
If it means that you sat in a science class and every time the teacher says you move this to this, you interrupt them, and at some point you realize you're so disruptive in the class that it's not the right way, then it's not your ability to write that's the problem. It is that the technique that you're trying to use to get the professor to speak isn't working. And so you got to look for alternatives. You know, I'd like to believe, for instance, that everybody who gives me directions can tell me right and left. But the truth is they can't.
Only a few people are elite in that particular skill set. Yeah.
There you go. So if somebody says, may I help you? And they really do want to help me, and I really do want the help, and they touch my arm, and they pull me a little bit left, I'm cool with that. I get that they may be doing the best they can do. Mm-hmm. And that's really what Live the Life You Want is all about, is figuring out for yourself, am I doing the best that I can do? Or am I settling because I don't think I have a choice?
Yeah. Or I don't have the tools.
Yeah. I think it's interesting the discussion around Live the Life You Want has kind of evolved into one about the strategies we use to kind of help encourage and inspire other blind individuals to raise their expectations for themselves. A discussion about us being, you know, retrospective about the way that we do it. And I think that really speaks to maybe the controversy around the tagline, you know, to bring it back full circle. Individuals are interpreting Live the Life You Want based on their own individual personal experience and perspective. And I think that if they don't understand it from the perspective of the organization, then they're always going to be, you know, kind of lost in what the tagline itself means. And I love the statement that you made earlier about, in our context of it, it's not about live the life you want as a blind person. It really is about creating life opportunities for blind people to live the lives they want as fully participating members of society.
You know, Dr. Jernigan used to say, this is no game we play. We're talking about real lives, and live the life you want is, in a sense, a promise that we make to anybody who wants to join with us to help eliminate the obstacles that keep them from living the lives they want. And that is a big deal. That means that this is not a plaything we're doing. This is a real thing. And I think it challenges us to come up to the promise that we will help you eliminate the obstacles that keep you from living the life you want if you're brave enough to dream and you're brave enough then to act on those dreams.
Well said. That's the only way we can close out. That's a great way to close out this discussion.
So there's a Braille Monitor survey too, correct? Because we really want this publication to be something that's very useful for our members and that they're actually finding out about and reading.
Spear more conversations like this one.
Yeah.
How can people give their feedback, Gary?
Well, we have a survey that's out there on the web. We have a survey phone number. We have a survey that you can take directly from the Braille Monitor. And what we're trying to figure out is, what do you want the Braille Monitor to be? We have a great tradition, but what is it to do now? We don't think of ourselves as writing history. We think of ourselves as living in the present and directing the future. And if that turns into history, that's really good. But we want to know from you what you want the Braille Monitor to be. So there are lots of different ways to do the survey, and maybe we can figure out a way to list them in the show notes of the podcast.
We will do that. We will list them in our show notes. And you can also check out the March issue of the Braille Monitor online. Go to nfb.org and click on publications and then on Braille Monitor. And you can definitely find out all about how to do the survey that way, too.
Yeah.
Hopefully individuals who are listening to the podcast will continue this discussion, because that's the way we continue to evolve.
I mean, I really hope that you give us some feedback. You can email us at podcast@nfb.org.
You could give us a phone call on a real phone at 410-659-9314, extension 2444.
You could find us on Facebook. Just search for National Federation of the Blind.
And you could join us on Twitter at @NFB_voice.
That's right.
Ooh, that was close.
That was close. You did it.
Gary, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Gary. This was a great conversation. I think we could have talked all day, but, you know, we'll
have to. Well, we could have.
And just to close out, just letting our listeners know, regardless of where you are on the spectrum of this particular conversation, we in the National Federation of the Blind know that you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.